guard Jalen Brunson during last night's Game 1. Not the only incident involving fans, as the league did say they have given a lifetime ban to the fan that ran on the court during last night's Game 1 and tried to get a selfie with Spurs center Victor Wembanyama. The league said another person connected to the incident was also given a lifetime ban. Dallas Mavericks looking for a head coach, and NBA insider Mark Stein reports the Mavericks have had exploratory internal talks about pursuing Michigan's Dusty May and Duke's John Shire for the Dallas coaching vacancy. Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final is tonight in Raleigh. Golden Knights and Hurricanes, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Vegas is up 1-0. Packers gave wide receiver Christian Watson a 4-year extension worth $110 million. Three-way tie at the Memorial. Wyndham Clark, J.J. Spahn, and Tommy Fleetwood lead at 5-under. Phillies lead the Padres in the 7th, 3-2.
Fox Sports Update on the Right Choice, KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, specials on wine, and dinner specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer introduced legislation aimed at lowering grocery prices by increasing competition within the meatpacking industry. Schumer unveiled the Family Grocery and Farmer Relief Act, which would require major meatpackers like Tyson, JBS, Cargill, and National Beef to focus on a single protein sector instead of multiple markets. The legislation would also provide financial and technical assistance for smaller meat processors and local supply chains. Well, Vermont has become the first state in the nation to ban paraquat, a widely used herbicide linked in scientific studies to Parkinson's disease. The ban takes effect November 1st and includes limited temporary exemptions for certain fruit crops through 2030. The move comes amid growing scrutiny surrounding paraquat as researchers continue examining potential links between long-term exposure and Parkinson's disease, particularly among agricultural workers and chemical applicators. Well, the Dairy Checkoff is using today, National Cheese Day, to promote cheese as a high-protein snack option. Dairy Management, Inc. launched the Body by Cheese campaign through its Dairy Does More platform, highlighting cheese as a convenient protein source for active lifestyles. Central to the campaign and distributed through influencer giveaways and social media promotions is the Parm Bar, a 2-ounce block of Parmesan packaged like a protein bar to spotlight cheese's nutritional benefits.
You've probably been told that to reach a millennial farmer, you have to go digital. Facebook, Vimeo, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, an online publication, or maybe a podcast. But which one? Oh, and how receptive is this age group to your sales pitch during non-work social time? Maybe the best place to reach a farmer with a farming solution message is when they are, well, quite frankly, farming. You know, it's easy for us to find them during the day as most farmers are behind the wheel of a pickup truck or farm equipment with the radio on, listening to this station for the Ag Information Network of the West News. If you'd like to deliver information about your terrific product or service, give us a call and we'll connect you directly with our community of loyal farmer listeners. Reach real farmers right here, right now, as they listen to what is important to their farm operation. They trust us, they'll trust you.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Lauren Simonetti, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Quantinuum's trading debut is mighty stellar. Its stock opening at $68 per share, 13% above its IPO price. The quantum computing startup is backed by Honeywell. Interest in quantum computing technology has grown rapidly over the past year. It promises to massively speed up computer tasks using physics. We're learning more about Comcast's plans for its British theme park business. It's planning an $8 billion plus investment in Universal's first European resort that will be operated in the UK. Berkshire Hathaway having a major impact on Macy's. The Wall Street Journal says its stock soared about 18% since mid-May when the conglomerate holding company disclosed its stake in the department store giant. Berkshire owns about 1% of Macy's. And that's your Fox Business Report. I'm Laura Cantor, invested in you.
Most investments today feel like second jobs. Real estate? You're a landlord. Stocks? You're a day trader. Crypto? You're a full-time researcher. You've got a life to live. Your investment should help you live it. That's why more Americans are choosing gold. Noble Gold has helped thousands protect their future with real physical gold. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free wealth protection kit. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
Should our judgment of welfare be based only on whether it raises the standard of living for recipients, or should we also consider what it does to the character of the people who participate? I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
For the last 2 days, I've been talking about welfare and the need to correct some of the costly, cumbersome, bureaucratic nonsense that has taken it far afield from its original purpose. Today, I'd like to touch on what it may be doing to the spirit and character of our people. Knowing how easy it is to be attacked as heartless and unfeeling, let me say a few things about my own position. First of all, I believe in our responsibility to help those who, for whatever reason, are unable to provide for themselves and their families. Right now, I believe we could do more for the truly needy if we weren't spread too thin, providing for some who are just greedy. Milton Friedman, the noted economist, once said, "When you start paying people to be poor, you wind up with an awful lot of poor people." From my own experience, I'm convinced that most welfare recipients are unhappy being on welfare, and they'd much rather be self-sustaining and self-respecting. I'm also sure, however, that encouraged by some professional welfareists, many lose their desire to leave welfare and begin accepting it as a way of life, indeed a career in itself. When this happens, we're destroying human beings, not salvaging them. There's a so-called National Welfare Rights Organization dedicated to demanding a voice in how much of a worker's earnings must be shared with them. A few years ago, a Mrs. Beulah Sanders, representing this organization before the House Ways and Means Committee, said, "Everyone in this country has a right to share the wealth. The money has gone into the pockets of the middle class. And if we don't get our share, we're going to disrupt this state, this country, and this capital." Federal officials have habitually said fraud in welfare was less than 1%. But Dr. Richard Nathan, while a deputy to the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, said, "Our problem is we can't even detect fraud." Former Congressman Bill Shirley of Iowa once told his colleagues, "Take the capital of the strongest, wealthiest, most freedom-loving country in history. Give it an unemployment rate of only 2%, but 1 out of 5 on welfare. The median income is $10,500, yet federal aid per capita is 6 times as much as it is for the citizens of Iowa. Then set up a federally funded consumer complaint department in a model city project, and what is the number one complaint of these deprived people? Jobs? Housing? Crime? Their color TV sets don't work properly." In 1968, CORE, the Committee on Racial Equality, told us why we should be supporting the present move in Congress to reform welfare. They said, handouts are demeaning. They do violence to a man, strip him of his dignity, and breed in him a hatred of the total system. Poor men want the same as the rest of us. They want to be independent. They want jobs and control over their own destiny. Welfare, they said, is no answer. We seek to harness the creative energy of private enterprise to achieve a solution to America's crisis. We look to American independence of spirit to recognize opportunity and to take advantage of it. It's happened in the past. It can happen again. The end of course quote. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. And today I have Josh Friedman. He is actually with Cal Coast News. He has been covering the war in Ukraine since the beginning of the war. And currently he has been in Ukraine for several weeks or months. And we're going to be talking about some of the things he's learned while he was there. We're also going to have David Duringer. David's going to be coming into the studio. He is a local attorney. And he is going... his wife's family is from Ukraine. He has been watching what's going on in Ukraine for some time. So we're going to be talking primarily about the war in Ukraine. There's a lot going on. I'm going to give some updates real quick for those that don't know. And first, what David's going to go over is a lot about the myths and the misinformation about Ukraine. But right now, Russia has really ramped up the aerial attacks. On Tuesday, they sent 8 Zircon missiles. 23 people died, 151 were injured across Ukraine in just that strike. And then Ukraine has now been striking Russia in its heartland. They struck outside of St. Petersburg. This was right before their major yearly economic forum, where they're trying to get companies, other countries, to invest in Russia, and they pounded them at that time. So it's been rougher on Russia over the last several months, and I'm going to give you some examples why. So in April, Russia lost more land than it took. And if you go back, I can't remember the exact hectares. It was like 100 in January, and then by March it was down to 20, and then by April they were getting back 100 and some. So there's been, Ukraine actually took more ground than Russia. The other thing is the amount of Russia problems. For example, on May 29th, 483 Russian vehicles were destroyed, most ever. By May 31st, that number was up to 524. But guess what? On May 31st, 1,550. 60 Russians were killed. The reason this is a big deal, Russia is way bigger. They have way more manpower. But guess what? At this point, more people are dying than they are conscripting or recruiting. So when you have more military men dying than you're bringing in, and all these vehicles, the war is at a pretty precarious point. Josh, I'm going to bring you in first. thank you very much for agreeing to do this today. And if you want, Josh just put a news story up with some great photos. It's on Cal Coast News. It is titled Necessity and Innovation in Wartime Ukraine. There was a forum, a military forum, with Americans. I'll let Josh give you a little explanation. It's called the Black Sea Forum. People from all over the world attended, and major players in government and in making military equipment. Josh, thank you very much for agreeing to call in today.
You're welcome, Karen. Good to speak with you. I know it's a busy week, given that we had an election on Tuesday.
Yes, it is.
But thank you for your interest in what's going on in this part of the world, nonetheless. As you mentioned, actually, I think you hit on a bunch of key points with regard to what a lot of people are framing it as Ukraine now taking the initiative or taking back the initiative in the war. The strike outside the start of the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, that was definitely a big deal. That comes only weeks after Russia almost had to call off its annual May 9 Victory Day parade, but there was pretty much a Trump-brokered agreement that allowed it to happen. But nonetheless, that was really scaled back. There was basically no military equipment at the parade this year. Now they've got all these international guests, some of whom are actually American influencers, which there has been a lot of talk about, at least online over the past couple of days. Some American influencers at the St. Petersburg event. Anyway, that event started with I believe it was an oil refinery getting struck outside St. Petersburg, and there being a huge cloud of smoke. So what I've heard from a variety of people, and I noted briefly in the story, is that it's really now, the war is now being brought to Russia. For 4+ years, Russians in Russia could go about their daily lives and essentially pay no attention to the war because it seemed like some very far off, happening in some far off place. But it is no longer. Ukraine's carrying out deep strikes as far as the Ural Mountains, which are very far away from the battlefield where the war is taking place predominantly. And they're carrying out a lot of very effective medium-range strikes and additional long-range strikes. To some extent, the Russian land bridge to Crimea has been nullified because the supply routes and the logistics in that area have been essentially bottlenecked by Ukrainian drone strikes targeting poles and roads and supply lines going in and out of Crimea. So definitely compared to the last time I was here, which was late last year, December 2025, it feels entirely different. And that's not just because the power is on. It's not just because it's warm outside and there's electricity and running water and whatnot. It may not be reflected in exactly what the Ukrainian people's sentiments are. I wouldn't say that people in general are walking around upbeat and optimistic, but when merely looking at what's taking place on the battlefield, what's taking place inside of Russia, a lot has changed in a half year or less.
And I want to explain to the public, Josh Friedman works with Cal Coast News, but he has traveled the world for the last 10 years. He has covered multiple wars. Cal Coast News did apply for a press pass for Josh to cover the war in Ukraine. He's also been to Russia. You were there about 5 years ago, right?
I was in Russia once, and that was in 2018, I believe.
But you've covered many wars, and he's covered the world. I think you've been to most of that. You've been from South America, covering the people coming up from Colombia and the terrible conditions in that area. You have covered the Kosovo. You've been all over the place. So I want people to realize Josh has a knowledge of covering these type of events. He goes to a lot of world forums on a regular basis and knows many of the big players who attend. Josh, can you give us a list of some of the big players that were at this forum?
Among Americans, because probably that's the demographic that people are most interested in hearing about, there were three senators. They were Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut, Gallegos, I'm forgetting where Gallegos is from, and then who was the third senator? I'm drawing a blank. But there were three senators there. There were congressmen, one of whom, who I noted and quoted in the story, Jim Hines, who's also from Connecticut. He's the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. And then there were prominent businessmen, particularly from the defense industry. In the story, I quoted Eric Prince, who many of you probably know is the founder of Blackwater. I would say that the politicians from the U.S. who were at the conference, I believe, were mostly Democratic, which isn't terribly surprising, but Eric Prince is definitely no Democrat. There was Pastor Mark Burns, who refers to himself as Trump's pastor, who speaks to Trump, who spoke at the conference and a side event about conversations that he's had with Trump. He was there too. And then there were a lot of politicians from in and out of Ukraine. Members of the RADA, which is the Ukrainian parliament, were there. It was actually hosted by a RADA member, Alexei Goncharenko, who I would say definitely has a political future. I don't know if he's going to be a future candidate for president of Ukraine, but I see him rising to some sort of higher office based on how he carries himself. The Lithuanian European Commissioner, who's now the European Commissioner for Defense, Kubilius. I think his name is Andrius Kubilius. He was there. Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, who was once thought to be Angela Merkel's replacement in Germany as Chancellor, but that didn't materialize. She was there and a speaker, kind of a sponsor of the event, or at least her party has some funds that was sponsoring. Was one of the sponsors of the event. There were a lot of prominent people there. Lord Ashcroft from the UK, who I believe is a billionaire, he gave one of the more interesting talks, actually, where he presented polling that he was conducting both in Ukraine and in Russia, and it's not easy to conduct polling in Russia. I'm not even sure how he pulled that off, but he presented some interesting polling, and probably the takeaway from that is that there is not a whole lot of expectation that the war is going to end very soon, but I do want to review those slides that he presented and the notes. There were people from media, from politics, from defense industry, lots of prominent people there. It was a very interesting event. I spoke with two ambassadors, one of whom I'm actually going to be meeting tomorrow. I don't think I'm supposed to disclose that, but one of the ambassadors that I spoke with was the Swedish ambassador to Ukraine, which is interesting timing because Ukraine and Sweden had just reached a deal for Sweden to provide fighter jets to Ukraine. So lots of interesting participants. And then maybe the most interesting group of participants, although they didn't come as a single group or block, were the soldiers there. You had everyone from Zeluzhny, who is the former head of the Ukrainian Armed Forces. He's now Ukraine's ambassador to the UK. Granted, he wasn't there. He was speaking via calling in, as did General Kellogg from the U.S., who used to frequent Ukraine. Anyway, anyone from Zeluzhny down to some soldiers at the brigade level were participants in the conference. And it was interesting speaking with soldiers. There were a couple members even of the Russian Volunteer Corps who are there, who are Russians that are fighting on the Ukrainian side. The commander of the Russian Volunteer Corps spoke. It was interesting hearing what he had to say because he can both provide the perspective of what's going on the battlefield from the Ukrainian side, as well as what's going on within Russian society, because he's Russian and grew up in Moscow. So really, there were lots of interesting perspectives shared at this conference.
And you had someone from what's it called? Blackwater, one of the heads of Blackwater was there.
I mentioned, Blackwater doesn't really exist anymore, but Eric Prince, who founded Blackwater and is very well known, he was there. He gave a speech. I quoted from his speech in the article. I thought he made some very interesting points. I thought he was also very blunt. Although I think in general, the American speakers were pretty straight to the point. But one of the things that Eric Prince said that I brought up in the article is that he flat out said that he's there, that he was in Ukraine to go meet with entrepreneurs and companies, defense companies here in Ukraine, and to try to partner with them and take their technology and to bring it back to the West, as he calls it, and to scale what they have. And he's already the chairman of Swarmer, which is the first Ukrainian defense company to be listed on the NASDAQ. So there's a lot going on with regard to the military industry in Ukraine. The innovation is happening fast, and I would say it's probably not grasped by most people worldwide, but Ukraine, because of its technological advancements in the military sphere, is really becoming a military power.
And will you explain, so one of the things that I found fascinating, I was calling Josh after the meetings and asking him what happened. So if the day would get over and Josh would give me a little bit of an update. One of the most fascinating things I found was there was a lot of talk on how all the red tape and bureaucracy in the U.S., we're so behind on technology. And, for example, we were knocking down $10,000 drones with $5 million missiles when we could have used a $1,000 Ukrainian drone. But we take so long to get things built and get approved that we are obsolete. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was? And is that why people are wanting to invest into military companies in Ukraine, because they don't have the red tape?
Well, there are a lot of people who want to invest in military companies in Ukraine because they've got a tremendous potential. You look at what's happening in the Middle East, as you somewhat alluded to, and at least on the U.S. and Gulf side of the Arab Gulf side of the Iran war, the technological capacity and intelligence and battlefield awareness that Ukraine has and by default that Ukrainian companies have is really needed right now. I think one thing that I also didn't bring up, or I didn't bring up in the article, was that there are actually companies, defense companies here, some of which are startups, probably many of which are startups. I talked to the CEO of one of them. They're selling directly to the military units. So rather going through the long, drawn-out process of of military contracting with the Pentagon like it's done in the U.S., in Ukraine, as Eric Prince spoke about and as we've alluded to, in Ukraine things have decentralized to the point that the commander of a brigade can say that I need some sort of tech or I need some sort of weapon system. I want to test this. And a defense startup can create that system and sell it directly to the brigade, bypassing all the red tape. However, that red tape still largely exists in many countries. I heard one big investor who was there was saying that he wants to and has a lot of money, wants to invest in Ukrainian startups or in Ukrainian defense companies regardless. But I believe he's saying that he couldn't because of the red tape in his country. And it's a notable Western country.
And David, what were you going to say?
Oh, hi, Josh.
Hi, David.
Yeah, I don't study this as professionally as you do, but I pick up things in here and there because my wife's family's back there. I pay pretty close attention, but I heard, I guess it's time.
Well, go ahead. We're going to come back, and David was going to talk about the difference in cost in Ukraine in here. John, we're going to take a quick break from our sponsors.
If you ever have an accident, just where do you take your vehicle for top-notch repair? I could tell you, but isn't it better to hear from past Davis Body Shop customers? Here's what Kim M. from Atascadero had to say.
What an amazing team. I could not have asked for better service, and my car looked as good as new when they were finished. Patrick took care of me from day one, always keeping me updated about the process and their speedy timeline. I highly recommend them to all my friends and family. Excellent job.
Scott from Atascadero had this to say.
Great body shop. I was hit by another vehicle and took my truck to Davis. The work was done over a month ago and the repair work still looks great. No hidden problems. The truck left Davis in better condition than before the accident. Thanks to Tim and Patrick for all the extra work. It's really appreciated.
And that's why Davis Body Shop is the largest auto body collision specialist in San Luis Obispo County with two locations. On El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
Hi, my name is Austin Streamland. At Slow Heating and Air, our passion for delivering exceptional quality and service never wavers. We're a family business serving our neighbors with honest service you can trust. We can help you fix, maintain, and install new heating and air conditioning systems.
And if another company says something big's broken,
call us for a second opinion.
805-423-5119. That's 805-423-5119. San Luis Obispo Heating and Air Conditioning, Inc. Keeping you in the comfort zone.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely. I have Josh Friedman and Dave Derringer. We have Josh is calling from Ukraine, calling in. David is here in the studio. And David, you were telling me that you had looked at some of the costs. What is the difference in cost generally from making things in Ukraine and other countries?
This is just something I heard on some YouTube just briefly. I don't even remember it for sure. I think it was drone production. Maybe it was some kind of missile production, but the cost ratio is pretty drastic. Only 25% the cost to produce in Ukraine versus in Europe, I think Germany. So that's the kind of cost savings European companies are looking at when they produce in Ukraine.
And Josh, were you hearing that more and more countries are wanting to buy actually military equipment from Ukraine?
Yes, and as you alluded to, I'd heard at the conference and I've seen in media reports that Ukraine can produce these interceptor drones at as low as $1,000 a drone. The Hornets are the Ukrainian interceptor drones that are pretty well known. And things have evolved fast here because last year I was in Ukraine quite a bit, and the drone bombardment in the cities in Ukraine was a big problem, and they were in large part getting shot down, but nonetheless many get through. And Ukraine had not really implemented interceptor drones at that point, but now they are using a lot of these interceptor drones, and it's just a staggering cost differential of $1,000 for a interceptor drone versus firing a $2 million Patriot missile at an incoming Shahed, which doesn't even make any sense. That's something that touched on in the article. I brought it up in a panel discussion, or Q&A here on Sunday, when there was a former Navy pilot there speaking about Kherson and things going on with drones. And it's totally outdated and unnecessary to be firing these $1 million, $2 million, et cetera, interceptors at drones, which might not even get the job done, especially when stockpiles are short. With that said, though, Ukraine is in desperate need of Patriot missiles, because the one major component that its air defense, that Ukraine's missing in terms of air defense right now, are missile interceptors. And lately, as Russia has gotten upset and retaliated against Ukraine for various strikes, they've been firing missile barrages into Ukraine, particularly here in Kyiv, but elsewhere as well. And Ukraine is in desperate need of missile interceptors like Patriots, but Zelensky announced that there's a deal in the works, and we'll see what happens.
Josh,
I believe it was reported by Bloomberg today that there's a deal for Germany to send Patriots to Ukraine, and I think Germany would then buy more from the U.S.
Josh, do you know if the Lima system is only effective against Kinzhals, or is it effective against the other KH-101 and Kitchens?
I don't know.
And one of the things that Russia is doing, Ukraine is going after infrastructure. They're going after Russia's finances. They're going after blowing up oils. Russia appears to be targeting apartment buildings. Josh has got a picture of a remains of an apartment block in Kharkiv. And this thing is blown to pieces. And you were saying in this photo on the other side, there's still people living in the building.
Yeah, it'd be much better if I published a video, because the video gives you the full context. It's really wild. It's something that you only see in a place like Kharkiv or maybe Kherson or some of the true frontline cities. But yeah, I walked around the neighborhood, and actually there's an apartment building that, as you say, part of it is blown to smithereens. There are two apartment buildings in that same area. Both have parts of them blown to smithereens, and then you walk to the other. The one that's pictured in the photo is basically half and half. Half of the building is uninhabitable, although there's a nice carpet or rug there. And then the other half, people are living there, and their kids playing in the playground right outside, people going in and out the door. It's truly bizarre. You look at that photo, and you would never expect that people are living in it, but if I could publish the video footage, then it would give the context.
My wife's aunt, this is back in January of 2023, but the apartment building next door to her was almost completely destroyed by a cage. It's believed to be a KH-22 kitchen missile, and I think 46 people died. Many, like well over 100 people were injured in downtown Dnipro. And so that was a while ago, but the Lima is an electronic interference system that Ukraine came out with, and it was over the last year or so, it's been 98% effective against Kinzhals, which is Russia's new most advanced hypersonic missile. But I haven't heard of it being effective against the others, like the KH-101.
There was a KH-101 fired into the Okhmadit Children's Hospital here in Kyiv, and I happened to be in Kyiv that day, so right after it happened, I went over there and filmed the devastation. That was a KH-101, and with that one, there was actually video footage of the missile going straight into the hospital complex.
We're going to take our top of the hour break and be back with more with Josh and David.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.